Mary Jo Pitzel has been covering the challenges in the state's child welfare system since 2013. The Arizona Republic reporter has seen for herself how gaps in accountability and government resources have deeply impacted countless families as well as caseworkers. And now she wants to share that with you, not through her writing alone, but this time through film. With the help of her colleague, videographer David Wallace, Pitzel has spent the last year and a half working on a documentary they're calling They Have Names. I sat down with her ahead of the release, and I started by asking about that name, what it means, and where it came from.
It's a very moving title from our perspective. We drew it from a foster mother whom we had interviewed, and she was asked how many kids had she fostered. And she said, you know, I don't keep count. I know their names. And her point is that the system tends to systemize things, and kids become data points and they become numbers. And her point is that they're not numbers. They have names. So let's use their names.
Yeah. So in the film, you tell the stories of five families, five cases going through the state's child welfare system. I want to ask, first of all, like, how did you get access to this? Because so much of the child welfare system is secret.
Yeah. Well, we could not have done this without these families opening up their lives to us. I mean, I started on this in May of 2018. Mm-hmm. So it's been a year and a half. And I remember I met one character. He's a father. Met him outside of court. And I said, this is what we're doing. We want to follow you along. We want to get in your business. We want to ask you uncomfortable questions. And we're going to do this over probably a long period of time because we can't publish names until a case is closed.
Right.
And we wanted to hopefully see these cases through to closure. So in this case, he was like, yep, that's fine. He feels that there is a story to be told, that it might benefit other families. In other cases, like the foster mother, she's been pretty public with a lot of her work already. So she was a pretty easy sell. The one I'm most proud of is that we were able to find a former foster youth who is now in prison. And that took some work to find somebody who fit that description, but we wanted to use that to address what people see as the foster care to prison pipeline. So I contacted some prison ministers, and through some outreach with them and some letters back and forth, I found a young woman who's was in foster care for about 10 years, became a mom herself, had to give her child up for adoption when she went into prison because she's going to be there for a long time. Mm. So there you see that sort of intergenerational cycle.
My incarceration has actually been a blessing to me. And it's given me more of an opportunity to meet other women who've been through the system, who struggled with it as a child, who know what it's like, and to actually not be afraid to speak out and say, hey, something needs to change.
I'm hoping to keep in touch with her and maybe even get on her visitor list. She's going to be out at Perryville for quite some time.
Yeah. So is there one story or one scene or one moment in this documentary that you just can't get out of your mind that you want to tell people about?
Yeah, I think it would help to give some understanding of the broader issues that confront the child welfare system. Most of the cases that come in are because of neglect of the children's basic needs, not because somebody's beating the crap out of their child or physically or sexually abusing them. It's neglect. And we had one of our characters is a grandfather who has worked very mightily to get custody and then adoption of his three grandsons. And tune in, you'll see how that one ends up. We also got a hold, though, of the three boys' mother, finally. Mm. She sat down and talked with us, and we got a better understanding of the struggle that she has had with raising children and fighting substance abuse. And I think it might give you a sense of the struggles that these parents face. There's a reason their kids are removed. There is help that's available, but it's very easy to condemn parents for bad parenting, but it's important to remember that there is usually a bond between the parent and the child. It's very, very hard to break. And her story is, it brought tears to my eyes.
Yeah. You also profile a young woman who's still only 17, right? Autumn Wilson, who had been in the foster care system since she was just a toddler. Give us a sense of her journey. Like, how is it possible, I guess, that she never found a permanent home.
Yeah, well, Autumn is, she's now 18, so she has aged out of the system. And my colleague David Wallace, who is the videographer, senior producer, who put this whole documentary together, he spent a lot of time with Autumn, in and out, you know, of the group home where she was living. And she's had just a lot of problems with the family. Her father, there were some abuse issues in the family, which led her to being into foster care and could never find a home that fit. She wound up growing up in group homes.
I cried the first night I came here because I was like, I'm in a group home. I know for a fact I'm not going to get adopted. And it really hurts.
Autumn's now and legally an adult. She was in an extended foster care program that the Department of Child Safety offers, kept in that for a couple of months, and now has moved out and is living on her own with her boyfriend.
So you have been covering the gaps and the challenges facing the child welfare system in Arizona for quite some time now. Did you learn anything new in the course of this, or was there a moment when you thought something went one way and it actually works this way once you were really in it and spent this much time with these people that stands out to you?
There was a couple of things like that. The father, there's a father of, when I met him, he had five children. They were in separate group homes scattered all over the place. He has a felony on his record. He's poor. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way he's going to get his kids back. And he, little spoiler alert, he did. And watching how that worked and how the system worked, the things that worked against him, but the things that also worked to help him to reunify his family was very, very interesting, very reassuring in some places.
Yeah. So when people get to watch this, what do you hope they get out of this? I mean, a year and a half, 2 years of work for you and David, you know, what might this kind of film be able to accomplish that your kind of beat reporting on this might not?
We hope that by hearing and seeing these stories, you know, from the people who themselves are involved in the system, you know, whether it be a foster parent, a grandparent, you know, a father, an inmate who's herself a child. There's something about seeing and hearing these people that is very moving in ways that, although I think my writing is fine, but that's very moving in ways that a print story is not. So I hope it gives people an insight into some of the struggles and the challenges that you face in the child welfare system. I mean, you come into that, your kids get removed, and the parents call it the hoops, but the hoops they have to jump through, the goalposts that they have to strive towards, while usually dealing with issues of poverty, dealing with problems with having housing, dealing with issues of trying to find a job that can support your family, and, oh, yeah, make sure that you've got time to go do drug testing and get to all these counseling sessions and tick all these things off the list of what you've got to get done. That I hope that people get an understanding of that. Also, I'm very proud that in one case, we were able to get into court with the permission of the juvenile judge who allowed us to observe an adoption. Mm-hmm. But I had watched that case all along and the struggles that this grandparent went through to get to an adoption stage. We are very proud that we were able to get that kind of access.
All right. Mary Jo Pitzel with the Arizona Republic, thank you so much.
Thank you.
They Have Names debuted in front of a sold-out audience at Crescent Ballroom last night, but you still have a chance to see the film. A second screening is now scheduled for December 3rd, and tickets can be purchased at tickets.azcentral.com.